So Neisseria gonorrhea, or NG, is the second most commonly reported disease in California. Approximately 45,000 cases were reported, representing an overall 17% increase since 2013 and about a 70% increase since 2010. Disseminated gonococcal infection, or DGI, is the most common systematic complication of acute gonorrhea caused by gonococcal bacteremia, with the prevalence ranges about 0.5 to 3% among patients with untreated mucosal gonorrhea infections. The risk factors for DGI are similar to other STDs, with the following exceptions. DGI is 4 times more likely to occur in women. Women usually have asymptomatic cervical mucosal infections and thus do not often present for treatment. Pregnancy and menstruation also increase women's susceptibility for DGI for unknown reasons. The characteristic response to appropriate antimicrobial therapy has been utilized as evidence of DGI, particularly in patients from whom NG cannot be isolated. Patients usually present with the typical arthritis, dermatitis syndrome, tenosynovitis, or any combination of the three, or fever or flu-like symptoms. Most DGI patients deny local genitourinary tract, rectal, or throat symptoms despite recovering NG from those same local sites in about 80% of the cases. The recognition of patients with DGI is often usually delayed for many reasons. There is a wide variation in the clinical findings. The variability may also be related to distinct differences in providers' assessment of arthritis and tenosynovitis. As a result, establishing a diagnosis of DGI is sometimes rather difficult, as the bacteremia associated with DGI is not continuous. The likelihood of obtaining positive blood cultures decreases over time. Likewise, NG is rarely recovered from skin lesions and rarely ever recovered from both blood and joint cultures. Consequently, DGI is frequently excluded in the differential diagnosis of acute asymptomatic arthritis or dermatitis in any sexually active patient due to the lack of presenting with both genitourinary and clinical toxicity. So why does any of this matter? The County Health Department notified the STD Control Branch of a cluster of 7 possible cases of DGI that occurred from June 2014 to May 2015 in one central county in California, a county that routinely investigates all of its NG cases. After the county found no epidemiologic linkage, the county reached out to the branch for help to determine a molecular linkage within the cluster of 7 DGI cases. Second, we wanted to know if a NG strain had emerged with the increased potential for DGI. Our study objectives included reviewing clinical characteristics to confirm the diagnosis of DGI, assessing for epidemiologic linkage using case and disease investigation, performing whole genome sequencing to establish genetic relatedness. For methods, we conducted a retrospective analysis of a series of DGI case reports and medical records were available from the California State STD Surveillance System. The inclusion criteria included confirmed clinical manifestations of DGI with clinical improvement within 48 hours of initiating therapy and the presence of NG from culture or NAT test. We obtained clinical and epidemiological data. DGI specimens were then submitted to the local county public health laboratory. Then the CDPH Microbial Laboratory Diseases performed MALDI-TOF MS and whole genome sequencing WGS. Here I provide a schematic of the standardized steps and timeline for WGS. Regarding a cluster of DGI cases, WGS was performed on 4 isolates based on availability. No selection criteria was applied. We compared the genomes of the 4 sequence isolates to estimate the relatedness using 3 different approaches. First, we used high-quality SNP-based phylogeny to compare the genomes to each other and identify the SNPs which differ between the isolates throughout their genomes. Then we used the whole genome sequences to type the isolates according to the established typing schemes for MLST and NGMAST. Once the inclusion criteria were met, we needed to classify the type of DGI based on a case definition. There is no CDC surveillance case definition for DGI. We found publications from 1976 to 1983 where DGI is classified into three categories: proven, probable, or possible, based on the presence of appropriate clinical manifestations of DGI, along with the presence of NG and or expected clinical response and improvement to antibiotic therapy. So what can we say about DGI in our cluster? We identified 7 cases of DGI. The age ranged from 31 to 60 years of age. The majority of persons identified as non-Hispanic white, male, and heterosexual. All cases had clinical manifestations of DGI that improved with the initiation of antibiotic therapy and positive culture, or NAT. 5 cases were classified as proven DGI, 3 with positive blood cultures, and 2 with positive joint cultures. 2 cases were classified as probable DGI, based on a positive anogenital NAT, specifically from the urine. When examining the clinical characteristics, we found that all 7 presented with either poly or monoarticular involvement, usually localized to the wrist and small joints. Most experienced constitutional symptoms, including fever and some form of a rash. All patients received a variation of treatment with ceftriaxone. Case investigation and clinical data revealed no epidemiologic linkage within the cluster of 7 DGI cases. Let's discuss how WGS determined the genetic relatedness of NG isolates in the DGI cluster. WGS was performed on the 4 available isolates from cases 2, 7, 5, and 6. Isolates were not available for the other 3 cases. The positions in the genomes that were compared between the isolates are called SNPs. As the number of SNPs that differ between the genomes increased, the similarities and therefore relatedness further decreased. The phylogenetic tree you see was built based on the differences in the SNPs. We can see the isolates 2 and 7 were more similar to each other and have clustered together, while the isolates from cases 5 and 6 have formed a separate cluster, one that is significantly different from the 2 cases. Even though isolates within one cluster are more similar to each other than to the isolates from the other cluster, the number of SNP differences within each cluster is high. So these WGS results don't suggest direct transmission between the patients. We also use whole genome sequences to type the isolates using MLST and NGMAST. I won't go into the details due to time limitations, but to summarize, these 2 other WGS-based genotyping approaches supported the data of the SNP tree, which we just discussed, and showed that 4 DGI cases belong to 2 very different lineages. So our conclusions. Clinically, all 7 cases within the cluster had clinical characteristics of DGI, and NG was isolated from all cases. Clinical data and case investigation revealed no epidemiologic linkage. WGS supported epidemiologic data, confirmed species identification as NG, and confirmed the involvement of 4 very distinct NG strains. There was no evidence of a common source, and WGS demonstrated there was no epidemic of a single virulent NG strain. With respect to limitations, I will discuss 3 here. Variable characterization of clinical manifestations and findings may have led to underdiagnosing and subsequent decreased reporting. WGS was performed on isolates from 4 of the 7. We have missing information from genetic relatedness and transmission for the remaining 3. We were unable to characterize the virulence genetic properties since we did not perform this particular analysis with WGS. So moving forward, we need to increase awareness among healthcare and public health professionals to recognize the clinical manifestations of DGI so patients are appropriately diagnosed and treated. There is likely underreporting of DGI as a result of many factors, including decreased awareness and recognition, delayed diagnoses, and lack of public health investigation of all NG cases. Whole genome sequencing offers a new opportunity in public health efforts to understand and reduce SD burden. WGS helps to clarify connection between isolates from index patients, provides additional information to facilitate and strengthen epidemiologic and disease investigation, and provides the most clear and unambiguous answers about relatedness of isolates using currently available methods. In summary, WGS greatly enhances our capacity to characterize transmission dynamics and sexual networks, and it is an exciting vision into the future of our STD prevention and control efforts. So I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators and co-authors, and thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and open the floor for questions.
It was a very nice presentation on a syndrome near and dear to my heart.
Thank you.
The Seattle series of 40 years ago mm-hmm. was, first of all, was 60% women and 40%
right.
men. I don't think the 4-to-1 ratio is true.
No.
My question is, has anybody looked, either WGS or the typing, has anybody ever contrasted and compared that to the old nutritional oxytyping system? And because in the Seattle series, like 80% were all a particular oxytype, so there seemed to be a common strain, but it was not nearly as precise. So one wonders how that varies with the current more scientifically solid methods.
Right, and that's a great question that I'll probably have to speak to my colleagues in microbiology because I do not know that answer.
But I can take your
information.
And did you have any information on symptomatic status in terms of genital symptoms?
I do. I can answer that. So this is a slide of all seven. And actually there was only one patient, and I believe it was, case 7, where he presented subsequently after being already diagnosed with DGI, initially stated by the third or fourth provider that they had penile symptoms, but other than that, no one else presented with any genitourinary symptoms. It was all
because,
a joint.
Because one of the characteristics back in that Seattle outbreak all those years ago was that the same AHU minus oxytype that mm-hmm. caused DGI also tended to cause a higher proportion of asymptomatic urethral infections
mm-hmm.
in men, a little bit less firm data in women. So this is perhaps consistent with that, but not enough members to.
Right.
Anyway, very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Julie Schillinger from New York City. That was fascinating.
Thank you.
I was just thinking about, you know, going back to New York and taking a look at some of our data. And you said that the county health department where these cases, this cluster was identified, that county, that they investigated all cases of gonorrhea.
Mm-hmm.
But would that really be necessary, given that these would have been either blood or joint aspirates? Wouldn't that be something that would be identifiable in the surveillance data?
So this particular county just investigates all NG cases. That was not a part of this particular study. That's just what they do routinely. So I think because of that, they were probably more likely to pick up DGI because they routinely investigate it. And again, like I said, given the difficulties in describing and assessing and diagnosing and probably underreporting, it may be more common, but we were able to identify seven a cluster because they do investigate all cases.
But I guess what I'm asking is, you know, have you looked at the California state data
to see
for blood and joint aspirates?
I think if I can recall, we did not find any rise in DGI during that time when we looked across the state. So this was of concern because in this particular county, there were seven cases in 1 year, but that was not shown in our state data.
Robert Herrick, Sutter County Public Health. You'd mentioned the possibility of using whole genome sequencing down the line. How feasible is that for routine public health investigation, especially for counties that don't have the resources to do contact tracing and investigation of gonorrhea?
So that is a great question. From my understanding from microbiologists, if the technology is available, it can be done. And as I read in some of the other data, it does reduce time and the return to get the information. But I don't know fully how to answer that question. But again, I can refer you to our microbiologist.
As a follow-up, were you culturing gonorrhea aspirate and then whole genome sequencing it, or what was the actual method of specimen collection?
I know. I know that we die, so there's a particular grass, so, and I can also ask our microbiologists. So from the isolates, you either need something from either blood or joint, and then you need to isolate it through, like, culture. And then from that step beyond, I would definitely have to talk to our, refer you to our microbiologist. But I know we isolated from either joint or fluid from the cases that we had available. So the four that we had available came from either blood or joint culture.
Thank you.